Gary Kah is our very special guest today. He is the former Europe and Middle East trade specialist with the Indiana government, has a long biography. He is the author of numerous books bringing a biblical perspective to world events. Gary, I want to welcome you to the Bill and Allison Show today.
Yeah, well, welcome, Gary.
Hey, it's great to be with both of you. It's been a while, and it's always a joy to be able to share with you.
Well, thank you. We've got a lot to cover. I think the first thing that on a lot of people's minds is, what in the world happened on Election Day in the midterms?
Well, you know, there have been at least five or six different reasons given why conservatives didn't fare better. And I think most people are familiar with those. But something that really hasn't been brought up that I've seen that we've been kind of drumming home for the last 10 years or so in some of our publications is the fact that socialists have been gaining about 1% a year. And so it's getting more and more difficult in most states, not all, but in most states for genuine conservatives to win. And the reason for that shift is the young people coming out of our universities are right at 70% ultra-liberal, and coming out of some schools over 80%. So you're looking at least two-thirds, if not three-fourths of them. And they're also voting at a higher percent than they were 20 years ago in a lot of cases. They've been activated, so to speak. They've become activists more than they were in the past. And while this is going on, our elderly population, which has been more conservative, at least 60-65% more conservative, they're dying off. Now, some of the college students, as they age a little bit and have children and grow families and start their own businesses, some of them move back a little bit toward becoming more conservative, but still with more of a liberal bent. So when this all shakes out and you crunch the numbers, it comes out to about a 1% gain per year for socialists. So I was telling people, I remember 7 or 8 years ago, I said in the next election cycle or the one after that, it's just going to be really difficult. Everything has to go just right for conservatives to win. Now, what happened in Florida was, number one, DeSantis is he's a strong, logical leader. It makes sense. He explains his positions well. And Florida prospered when other states were really hurting through COVID. So that was part of it. But along with that, the results were augmented by the fact that many left New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, and other liberal states and moved to Florida, conservatives. They just couldn't take it anymore. Several of our friends did just that. One of our very good friends moved to the Fort Lauderdale area from New Jersey. They just couldn't take it anymore. And so when you have a few hundred thousand people moving down there in the last few years, many of them, most of them conservative, that helped as well. So what you had there was every single county in Florida being carried by DeSantis, which if you would have told me that 5 years ago, I would have been hard-pressed to believe that that could happen, but it has. And so, I mean, it can happen, but it takes strong leadership and everything going just right in a certain environment for conservatives to be able to win in some states. In places like California, New York, Oregon, Washington, you've got conservative counties, but they're mostly the rural counties. So if you look at a map, the U.S. looks pretty red. But the problem is the big cities. There are about 20, 25 big cities in the U.S. that kind of set the tempo for the rest of the country. And whatever way they go, and they recognize their power, the mayors of those cities get together on a regular basis and do some planning, and they stick together. So whether it's Chicago or San Francisco or New York, it's pretty much the same in all those big cities, and they're flexing their muscles. And that's the problem. So in some states, people are being held hostage, practically, by the mayors of these big cities. We have a son who lives in Illinois. Well, good luck. You know, Illinois is mostly conservative, the counties. But Chicago, that area that's got, what, 6 to 8 million people living there, goes heavy Democrat, and so the rest of the state, no matter how, you know, how much of a percent they vote conservative by, it keeps going to the liberals. It keeps going further and further to the left. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts. And so unless some of these big cities can be turned around, and I don't see that happening unless people get so fed up with the crime and everything else. But you look at Chicago, you know, and it's still liberal and voted liberal despite everything happening there. So we're in a whole different generation, a whole different mindset of especially young people having really become socialists through their college experience, and they're out there now and they're pushing that agenda.
We were at a luncheon a few years ago.
Yeah.
And sat with a state senator who had just finished running for governor, Republican. He carried, I believe it was every county or almost every county in Illinois.
Yeah, I think it was every county.
Every county in Illinois
except for Cook County.
Except Cook County,
which
he
is
lost.
Chicago.
And he lost.
And he lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I know.
That is an eye-opener for me. Yeah. I didn't realize that sort of thing was going on.
Yeah, I think the big city mayors in some cases have more power and influence than the governors of the states that they're in because of the population that lives within their limits.
Sure.
And if they vote one way, you know, you can forget it, and that's a tragedy. And that's why Oregon, for example, I think something like 9 counties in Oregon really want to become part of Idaho and not be part of Oregon anymore. Because, you know, Portland has I think over half the population of the whole state and is very liberal, and so that's the case in other states too. Having said that, I think the way this is all going to unfold, this trending towards socialism, I think certain of the conservative states like Texas, Florida, Alabama, South Dakota, some other states, I think the point in time is going to come where they're going to draw the line in the sand. It's already beginning to happen. They're saying the federal government is not going to step in and do what they're supposed to do for national security by guarding our border and you know, coming through in other areas where they haven't been. Then we're going to have to take matters into our own hands, and eventually that's going to cause more and more contention between the federal government and that particular state or states. And so at what point does it get to where those states say, okay, we're done, we're pulling back, we're not part of this anymore, and how far would it have to go before the feds come in militarily and try to stop it, or would they? So those are some of the unanswered questions, but that's the kind of territory we're in now where these are legitimate questions to ask, and we're heading in that direction. If it came down to an actual fight, I mean, major civil unrest to the point of almost a civil war, which some people now, even in the media, even on Fox, it's been brought up a couple times that things could get to that point. If it does, it would be a sad day for America because our foreign enemies, I've always thought they would attack us when we're at our weakest moment, and we probably would be at our weakest moment at that time. So it's difficult to see a way out of this that will end well for our country, politically speaking. And that's one reason we've been focusing more and more on the spiritual side of things and individuals as a whole, because unless individuals change and embrace the truth of Christ and their and the religious foundation and go back to our Judeo-Christian roots, we're building on a faulty foundation, and things are just going to keep getting worse.
I want to go back to for a moment, and you talked a little bit about the younger people, younger generation coming out of school and being so radicalized. That's because of the professors, of course, at these colleges, universities. How did things change from years ago? How did the left take over these institutions?
Well, you're exactly right. In the last presidential election, as I recall, it was either 92 or 93% of the college professors that were surveyed voted Democrat. So there's a marked imbalance. And I can't understand why parents keep sending their kids to these liberal institutions. institutions and even paying their way because it's predictable what the results are going to be. But you have to go way back to the early 1900s when the General Education Board, which was largely funded by the Rockefeller Foundations, began having some influence in the area of curriculum through the teachers' unions, and then eventually the NEA with some of the same sources behind them. So you've had globalist money, one world money, socialist money behind these institutions going way, way back. But it took a while for them to gain the kind of influence and control that they sought. And really, after World War II, it began taking hold in a major way. And by the 60s, we saw the results of it. And ever since, you've had more and more college professors getting in, holding a much more liberal one-world view. And then once they're in and get tenure, it's difficult to get rid of them. But just to backtrack a little bit, the first thing they did, the globalists, through the Rockefeller Foundation and Ford Foundation and some of these other one-world leaning foundations, was they gained control of the teachers' colleges, the teacher universities, like Columbia, for example, and some of those big-name Eastern schools, Yale, Harvard, as well as others. And if you looked at how many universities today, how many of their presidents came from those institutions, it would blow your mind. I did the research on this 30 years ago, and it was already a huge percentage, and I'm sure it'd be even higher now. And so they leveraged their power and influence very well. And so once you have presidents of universities all across the country who have bought into the globalist mindset because of the universities that they went to, which at the time mainly on the East Coast, then they hire professors that share their worldview. And so now I think it's irreversible. I think the best thing parents can do is just not send their kids to those colleges, but it's even impacting many of the Christian universities now. And so you can't just, as a Christian, assume if you send your kid to a certain college that you know, calls themselves Christian, that they're going to be conservative and support the values that you've taught your kids at home. You really have to do your homework and research on that. We went through that with four of our kids, and we were surprised by some of the things we learned about some of the so-called Christian institutions. They've been heavily penetrated as well.
We've been speaking with Gary Kaw, who's the author of numerous books, Bringing a Biblical Perspective to World Government.
World events.
I'm
and
sorry.
World government too, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And tell us something about your newsletter.
Yeah, it's actually a research news journal. It's about 20 pages. Every 4 months we put this out. We've got some of the top researchers in the world that write articles for us, and I typically write the lead article. And we do this because it's really the only way we can stay in touch with all the people interested in this subject matter. Because if I took the time to write another book, by time it would be finished, it'd be out of date. Things are just moving too quickly now. And so we try to go behind the scenes through the contacts that the Lord has blessed us with around the world that we've gained over the last 30 years of doing this, and bring to you news and information that you're just not going to get through the mass media. And so we do our best, with God's help, to stay on top of this and to help Christians to be discerning in these very deceptive times.
And how can people find out about your newsletter?
Yeah, you can go to our website, GaryKaw.org. You can subscribe there, and you can also get my two books there, In Roots of Global Occupation and The New World Religion. Both of those books are full of documents that we've reproduced in them to prove that we're telling the truth, that we're not just pulling this information out of thin air. And those books help lay a biblical foundation to understand the current events, the major developments going on in our world right now. And then our quarterly publication, Hope for the World Update, is what keeps people up to date on this. So we really encourage people to subscribe. In doing so, you help us to exist and to continue to do what we do, and we really appreciate your help. And once you have it, make copies, get it out to people. We just want to get this message out as quickly as possible because there's so much at stake.
Thank you, Gary. Yeah. And
I would encourage every one of our listeners to go to the website and to subscribe to Gary's journal and also read his books.
And his website, again, is garykah.org, and that's GaryKah.org.
Our very special guest today is Gary Kah. His background is quite extensive. He's the former Europe and Middle East trade specialist with the Indiana government. He's authored numerous books bringing a biblical perspective to world events. And in fact, he just returned from meetings in Europe. And that's kind of the lead in that I have. Gary, welcome to the Bill and Allison Show.
Welcome, Gary.
Hey, it's good to be with you again.
Thank you. Well, you just got back from meetings in Europe. So I'm going to ask you, who do you think are some of the major players on the world stage? I guess they're often called globalists. Who are some of these folks? Do we know?
Yeah, I often get asked to name names because a lot of times we talk generally about, you know, the trend toward globalism, but who are some of the people behind this who really wield some power and influence? And so I've put together just a short list. It's not a complete list by any stretch, but just to give people an idea, I'll start with Klaus Schwab, who, of course, is the founder and director of the World Economic Forum, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Bill Gates, who also is a major player in that World Economic Forum, as is George Soros, and then some other names, Yuval Noah Harari, well-known transhumanist out of Israel, who's causing all kinds of problems, Justin Trudeau, who's a darling of the World Economic Forum in many regards, very close to Klaus Schwab. You've got, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay, I had this loud beep in my phone. I'm sorry, you'll have to edit that out. Okay. I thought I was
We did not hear it.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, I'll keep going after Justin Trudeau, so I'll just keep going here. I'll pause for a moment. Also, most of the Biden administration is committed to the globalist agenda. The Rockefeller, Carnegie, Ford Consortium of Foundations, various leaders of the United Nations, pretty much everybody near the top of the UN, including the head of the World Health Organization, for example, various leaders of the European Union, the Club of Rome, the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Trilateral Commission, all of them working together. You've got some of your central bankers, the bulk of your television, print, and social media magnates, much of our education establishment, and also certain institutional investment conglomerates, such as BlackRock, all of them pushing this globalist agenda. But it doesn't stop there. You also have numerous religious leaders, including some from the World Council of Churches, along with what I call High Freemasonry, or Illuminized Freemasonry. So these are just a few of the institutions and key figures involved in this, and it kind of branches out from there. The people in the higher levels of this, I think, understand where they're wanting to take things. But if you go down a step or two, you have people who don't see the whole picture. They're just doing their part, and they think they're helping maybe to make the world a better place. I've often likened it to a major corporation. Let's just randomly take Chrysler Corporation. So you've got the president on top and the immediate people around him. They know where they want to be with the company 5 to 10 years down the road. And then you've got the people underneath them and those in middle management that are kind of overseeing their areas. They don't see necessarily the entire picture, but they see part of it. And as long as they do a good job, they're left alone, they get promoted, and so forth. And then at the bottom, you have the assembly line workers. They're just coming to work every day doing their job and want to benefit the company in whatever way they can, because they know if they do, you know, their job will be secure and they'll do well. It's kind of like that within this globalist movement, almost like a pyramid kind structure. But underneath it all, or I should say on top of it all, at the highest levels of it, the ultimate motivation is religious, and we can get into that later on, but I believe people make a mistake when they view it all this being strictly political or for the sake of economic power and control. These people need that kind of control to do what they want to do and to take the world in the direction they want to take it in, which ultimately it's an occultic Luciferic agenda. And I may be insulting some people's intelligence here, because some people would say, you've got to be kidding. Talk about these people being Lucifer worshipers. Well, some of them are. Some of them are. And I've actually read out of some of their books, and in my book, In Roots of Global Occupation, I give you page numbers and everything out of their books where they come out and reveal who their source of inspiration is. But this is never, ever mentioned in the media. And so when people come out and talk about this and document it, people just find it hard to believe. We are in a spiritual battle. That's what it ultimately is. Now, as far as the World Economic Forum, to get back to that, I think to bring it home to what's going on in the world right now with the war in Ukraine, I think the longer that war rages, the greater the likelihood that a NATO member is going to encounter hostile exchanges with Russia. It almost happened recently here in Poland. And if that were to happen, it would activate Article 5 of the NATO agreement, and suddenly we could be looking at a regional conflict or even a world war. And it appears to me that this is what the global elites cooperating with the World Economic Forum are actually pushing for. I believe they actually want a major, drawn-out conflict in Europe that will affect the entire world. Having lost their COVID pandemic momentum, at least for the time being, I believe they need a crisis of really historic proportions to sink the ship, so to speak, to completely destroy the old world order of sovereign nation states. The world's current economic and financial system, I believe, has to be brought to its knees before the World Economic Forum's new global digital cashless system can be effectively introduced as the only solution. See, if everything's going well in the world, if the world is relatively in peace, the global economy is humming along, there's no reason for people to change. They'd be suspicious of that. But if everything's collapsing, if the economy is in shambles, if the world is at war, and it looks like this is it, we're going to destroy ourselves, everything's falling apart, then the powers that be can step in with their solution, which is going to be a type of world government system, a single global economic system that they can tightly control. The ultimate goal of the World Economic Forum's Great Reset, which more often than not is the term they use to describe where they're headed, is to gain complete control of the world's economy and financial structure, in order to really to install a centralized, heavily regulated, totalitarian international system, very similar to that of China's social credit system. China is the model. And so if you want to know where all this is going, look no further. And China is practically cashless now. They've taken that step over the last 2 years. So at that point, they're able to control every move that people make. So that's just a bit of an overview of the World Economic Forum, some of the people involved in it, and where I believe they want to take things.
We've been speaking with Gary Kaw, who's the author of numerous books, bringing a biblical perspective to world government.
World events.
I'm sorry.
And world government too, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Gary, tell us something about your newsletter.
Yeah, it's actually a research news journal. It's about 20 pages. Every 4 months we put this out. We've got some of the top researchers in the world that write articles for us, and I typically write the lead article. And we do this because it's really the only way we can stay in touch with all the people interested in this subject matter. Because if I took the time to write another book, by time it would be finished, it'd be out of date. Things are just moving too quickly now. And so we try to go behind the scenes through the contacts that the Lord has blessed us with around the world that we've gained over the last 30 years of doing this, and bring to you news and information that you're just not going to get through the mass media. And so we do our best with God's help to stay on top of this, and to help Christians to be discerning in these very deceptive times.
And how can people find out about your newsletter?
Yeah, you can go to our website, GaryCod.org. You can subscribe there, and you can also get my two books there, and Roots of Global Occupation and The New World Religion. Both of those books are full of documents that we've reproduced in them to prove that we're telling the truth, that we're not just pulling this information out of thin air. And those books help lay a biblical foundation to understand the current events, the major developments going on in our world right now. And then our quarterly publication, Hope for the World Update, is what keeps people up to date on this. So we really encourage people to subscribe. In doing so, you help us to exist and to continue to do what we do. And we really appreciate your help. And once you have it, make copies, get it out to people. We just want to get this message out as quickly as possible because there's so much at stake.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah. I would encourage every one of our listeners to go to the website and to subscribe to Gary's journal and also read his books.
And his website, again, is GaryKah.org, and that's GaryKah.org.
Our very special guest today is Gary Kah. His background is quite extensive. He's the former Europe and Middle East trade specialist with the Indiana government. He's authored numerous books bringing a biblical perspective to world events. Gary, I've often said to people who kind of poo-poo this, oh, this is all conspiracy theory, all you have to do is read the documents. Go online and read what they say or read their books. This isn't theoretical. They brag about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Klaus Schwab, you know, he wrote a book called The Great Reset, and it came out, I mean, right on the heels of the COVID pandemic. So he had to know it was coming. They had to be involved in it from early on, because you can't snap your fingers and have a book done in a few weeks, not the kind that he wrote, and to have it out on the shelves. And so they've used this pandemic to help set the stage. But there are other big players, too, that you just don't hear about in the media for whatever reason, that are working with Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. And one of them, do I dare mention Pope Francis? He's involved in this push for globalization up to his eyeballs. And I realize it's not popular to talk about it, especially among Catholics, but increasingly conservative Catholics are realizing where this Pope is at and are beginning to speak out. But I came across something over a year back that was astonishing about the influence that Pope Francis now has from an economic standpoint. I just want to share some of these details, because you're not going to get this through Fox or Newsmax or any of the other big media sources. On December 8th of 2020, so about 2 years ago, there was a new alliance established between Pope Francis and a group called the Guardians for Inclusive Capitalism. And I got this information straight from a Vatican press release. So this is not me telling you this. This is a direct quote from this Vatican press release. Okay, so here we go. It says, the Council for Inclusive Capitalism with the Vatican, a historic new partnership between some of the world's largest investment and business leaders and the Vatican, launched today. And again, that was on December 8th of 2020. It goes on to say, the council is led by a core group of global leaders known as Guardians for Inclusive Capitalism. These leaders represent more than $10.5 trillion in assets under management, companies with over $2.1 trillion of market capitalization, and 200 million workers in over 163 countries. The organization challenges business and investment leaders of all sizes to embrace the council's guiding principles and make public commitments to act on them. And I might just add in, a lot of this has to do with the Green New Deal and climate change. Okay, let me continue with the quote. Speaking to the Guardians, Pope Francis said, quote, an economic system that is fair, trustworthy, and capable of addressing the most profound challenges facing humanity and our planet is urgently needed. You have taken up the challenge by seeking ways to make capitalism become a more inclusive instrument for integral human well-being. And like I said, a lot of this, if you read on and other things that have come out from the Pope, He's very much involved in the climate change movement. So a lot of that, a lot of this agenda has to do with using these corporate leaders to put in place the infrastructure and then put pressure on other companies to follow their lead with this whole hyper-environmentalism, which ultimately is driven by the forces most committed to globalization, which includes the Pope. Now, of all people to put in charge of these guardians, Lynn Forrester de Rothschild is the founder of the council and the managing partner of Inclusive Capital Partners. She says, "This council will follow the warning from Pope Francis to listen to the cry of the earth and the cry of the poor and answer society's demands for a more equitable and sustainable model of growth," end quote. So so he's got a Rothschild that he's put in charge of these guardians of this council, and some of the other names, I won't name all of them, although I did that in one of our issues last year, but for the sake of time, I'll just name a few of the names. There are 27 altogether, but involved as a guardian of this council, you've got the CEO of MasterCard, the CEO of DuPont, the executive chairman of DuPont, the CEO of Merck, the CEO of Johnson & Johnson, the CEO of Visa, also the CEO of British Petroleum, the president of the Rockefeller Foundation, the president of the Ford Foundation, the CEO of Bank of America. So, you know, these same power players that we've known of for years as being involved in pushing this globalist agenda, they sit together on this special council of the Pope, that the Pope has assembled. And like I said earlier, there are some conservative Catholics who've recognized what is going on and are beginning to speak out on this. One prominent Catholic figure who's been sounding the alarm is Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano. And on October 25th of 2020, which was just a few days before the U.S. presidential election, Vigano sent an urgent and very personal letter to President Trump. And I want to share with listeners just a few excerpts from his open letter to President Trump. He said, and I quote him, "A global plan called the Great Reset is underway. Its architect is a global elite that want to subdue all of humanity, imposing coercive measures with which to drastically limit individual freedoms and those of entire populations. Behind the world leaders who are the accomplices and executors of this infernal project, there are unscrupulous characters who finance the World Economic Forum and Event 201, promoting their agenda. The purpose of the Great Reset is the imposition of a health dictatorship hidden behind tempting promises of ensuring a universal income and canceling individual debt. The price of these concessions from the International Monetary Fund will be the renunciation of private property and adherence to a program of vaccination against COVID-19 and COVID-21 promoted by Bill Gates with the collaboration of the main pharmaceutical groups. Beyond the enormous economic interests that motivate the promoters of the Great Reset, the imposition of the vaccination will be accompanied by the requirement of a health passport and a digital ID, with the consequent contact tracing of the population of the entire world. Those who do not accept these measures will be confined in detention camps or placed under house arrest, and all their assets will be confiscated," end quote. Now, this is not just anybody. This gentleman was the Vatican ambassador to the United States. Officially, they don't call it ambassador, but they call it apostolic nuncio. But he was the top representative from the Vatican to the United States. He's probably close to 80 years old and feels like he doesn't have anything to lose. But, I mean, he has really stuck his neck out exposing what the Pope is up to. He wraps up just another paragraph here. He says, as is now clear, the one who occupies the chair of Peter, referring to the Pope, has betrayed his role from the very beginning in order to defend and promote the globalist ideology, supporting the agenda of the deep church who chose him from its ranks, end quote. And then he goes on and urges President Trump to take a stand on this and to fight it with everything he's got. And then, of course, you know, the election was held, and we all know what happened. But most people are totally unaware of what's going on behind the scenes with this. I'm glad that some conservative Catholics are waking up and speaking out on this, because they really need to. But it's not just the Pope. He's got quite a few people around him that are pushing this. They're networking tightly with the World Economic Forum. And you also have Protestant leaders in the same camp. The World Council of Churches, which was founded right after World War II, initially received a huge grant from the Rockefeller Foundation, which you don't even need to know more than that. So it's had globalist money behind it from the very beginning. And so your mainline church leaders, from the Presbyterian, Episcopalian, United Methodist, United Church of Christ, these various church groups that are part of the World Council of Churches, have been very influenced by globalists for decades now, really for almost two generations. And so that explains a lot, because the World Council of Churches has been increasingly pushing for a type of unity with the Vatican. So what you have now is a strong agreement among top Protestant leaders and Catholic leaders, which are coming together in a type of one world church setting. And all of that needed to be necessary in order for, I call it false Christianity, to join together with the leaders of other religions in this interfaithism, because without the world's religions cooperating together and coming together, you can't really have an effective world government system. And the powers that be understood that, have understood that very well for a long time. And so a lot of the battle has been fought in the religious realm, trying to get Christians on board, either naively or to just completely get them to change their worldview and jump on board and become socialists, which increasingly is happening, unfortunately. So a lot going on here on many different fronts.
We've been speaking with Gary Kaw, who's the author of numerous books, Bringing a Biblical Perspective to World Government.
World events,
I'm
and
sorry.
And world government too, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Gary, tell us something about your newsletter.
Yeah, it's actually a research news journal. It's about 20 pages. Every 4 months we put this out. We've got some of the top researchers in the world that write articles for us, and I typically write the lead article. And we do this because it's really the only way we can stay in touch with all the people interested in this subject matter. Because if I took the time to write another book, by time it would be finished, it'd be out of date. Things are just moving too quickly now. And so we try to go behind the scenes through the contacts that the Lord has blessed us with around the world that we've gained over the last 30 years of doing this, and bring to you news and information that you're just not going to get through the mass media. And so we do our best, with God's help, to stay on top of this and to help Christians to be discerning in these very deceptive times.
And how can people find out about your newsletter?
Yeah, you can go to our website, GaryKaw.org. You can subscribe there, and you can also get my two books there, In Roots of Global Occupation and The New World Religion. Both of those books are full of documents that we've reproduced in them to prove that we're telling the truth, that we're not just pulling this information out of thin air. And those books help lay a biblical foundation to understand the current events, the major developments going on in our world right now. And then our quarterly publication, Hope for the World Update, is what keeps people up to date on this. So we really encourage people to subscribe. In doing so, you help us to exist and to continue to do what we do, and we really appreciate your help. And once you have it, make copies, get it out to people. We just want to get this message out as quickly as possible, because there's so much at stake.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah. I would encourage every one of our listeners to go to the website and to subscribe to Gary's journal and also read his books.
And his website, again, is garykah.org, and that's GaryKah.org.
We're talking with Gary Kah, our very special guest. He is the author of numerous books, bringing a biblical perspective to world events. He's been on the Bill and Allison Show before, and we're happy to invite him back. His website is garykah.org, GaryKah.org. And Gary, we in some previous interviews with you, we've talked about some of the key global players in the World Economic Forum and some of these people, what they're doing behind the scenes, Klaus Schwab and some names that may be familiar to some people in our audience. I'm interested in going more to that, how they're going to introduce their plans, particularly a global currency. How are they going to affect those details?
Yeah, ultimately, that's one of their goals, is to have a single global currency unit, or currencies of different nations, but that all tie into the exact same weighted system. But sooner or later, they're going to try to introduce this. But it goes back to an executive order that Biden signed. It was Executive Order 14067 back on March 9th regarding digital assets to pave the way for this new system. So the executive order has laid the groundwork. It's just a matter of time now. And it's my personal belief that there has to be a major slowdown or collapse of the U.S. economy for them to make that move. So if they're going to do it anytime soon, then a lot would have to happen.
Well, it's important. Isn't it important to clarify that we're not just talking about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies that people are familiar with, right?
Correct. Correct. This is going to be something completely new that would supersede all of that. It could have a crypto element in it, but it wouldn't necessarily have to. What we do know for sure is that it would be an electronic monetary unit, and that they want to get rid of all cash as quickly as possible. So, you know, when this time comes, I imagine they would have to give people a certain period of time to turn in their cash, and they'd be given certain credit toward an electronic monetary unit. I don't know if that would be 3 weeks or 3 months or what, but it wouldn't be very long. It would unfold pretty quickly based on everything we're hearing. But if this new all-digital system were permitted to move forward, it would represent the loss of any remaining privacy that we have as citizens, and that's my biggest concern. Physical cash inherently provides a measure of freedom, and without it, the globalist socialist powers would know our every transaction and therefore our every move. They'd be able to control and dictate every facet of our lives, and that to me is very dangerous. The new U.S. monetary unit would link into a global system that will accept only electronic payments. And as I mentioned already, some economists believe that in order for this type of a system to be introduced and fully accepted, our current system would have to be intentionally collapsed, or at the very least be brought to a standstill through some type of economic financial crisis. And if this were to be the case in order for a new system to be rolled out within the next couple of months, then that would mean there would have to be a major shaking between now and then. Regardless of how it's eventually introduced, we do know that the world is being pushed in this direction, because more than 100 countries are currently exploring or piloting central bank digital currencies. They're called CBDCs. More than 100 countries, major countries, are already on board. They're moving in this direction. So all we need is some type of a slowdown or collapse, and that would present the perfect opportunity for them to introduce it. In our fall issue, before the election, I urged our readers to intercede in prayer on behalf of our nation on three fronts. I said, first, for a favorable outcome in the elections. Well, conservatives did take back the House just barely. And there were a few other major victories around the country, but for the most part, you know, it wasn't a sweeping red wave as some thought it would be. But the second thing I asked for people to pray for was that Biden would be prevented from declaring martial law if there's an economic collapse. And thirdly, to make it impossible to introduce a cashless system at this time. Because if that happens, once that happens, things will unfold, I believe, at a lightning pace. And it's going to be completely irreversible. So something still to be praying into. A lot of people want to give up and stop praying, but we can't do that. We've got to take a stand and keep fighting this as long as we can. If we stop, it'll just come about that much more quickly. And some people say, well, we do know how it's all going to end, and we do know the Lord is in control, and he's going to return and put a stop to this at some point. But having said that, you know, as the son of parents who went through World War II, my father fled from the communists in Croatia at age 12, and then he fled from the Nazis in Austria at age 13. Within the space of less than 1 year, he and his family, I mean, they gave up everything they had to try to remain a free people. Nobody wants to be caught up in all of this. And once it happens, you wish that it wasn't the way it was, because persecution of Christians is going to follow. I guarantee you that. If socialists are in control, it's very predictable what will happen. And so it's better to take a stand now and push back on all this rather than just give up and just, you know, let it all come and then complain about it and go through these difficult times. It's going to happen eventually. I believe that. But I believe if there was a mass repentance in this country, even at this late hour, it could still be held back for a period of time.
We've been speaking with Gary Kaw, who's the author of numerous books, bringing a biblical perspective to world government.
World events.
I'm
and
sorry.
And world government too, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Gary, tell us something about your newsletter.
Yeah, it's actually a research news journal. It's about 20 pages. Every 4 months we put this out. We've got some of the top researchers in the world that write articles for us, and I typically write the lead article. And we do this because it's really the only way we can stay in touch with all the people interested in this subject matter. Because if I took the time to write another book, by time it would be finished, it'd be out of date. Things are just moving too quickly now. And so we try to go behind the scenes through the contacts that the Lord has blessed us with around the world that we've gained over the last 30 years of doing this, and bring to you news and information that you're just not going to get through the mass media. And so we do our best with God's help to stay on top of this and to help Christians to be discerning in these very deceptive times.
And how can people find out about your newsletter?
Yeah, you can go to our website, GaryKaw.org. You can subscribe there, and you can also get my two books there, In Roots of Global Occupation and The New World Religion. Both of those books are full of documents that we've reproduced in them to prove that we're telling the truth, that we're not just pulling this information out of thin air. And those books help lay a biblical foundation to understand the current events, the major developments going on in our world right now. And then our quarterly publication, Hope for the World Update, is what keeps people up to date on this. So we really encourage people to subscribe. In doing so, you help us to exist and to continue to do what we do, and we really appreciate your help. And once you have it, make copies, get it out to people. We just want to get this message out as quickly as possible because there's so much at stake.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah. I would encourage every one of our listeners to go to the website and to subscribe to Gary's journal, and also read his books.
And his website, again, is garykaw.org, and that's GaryKaah.org.